For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, everyone, to a kick-ass episode of Bad Signal Podcast, sponsored by Better Edge. Always have to mention Better Edge. And Steve's dog that's barking in the background.
Always is. Just he knows when we start recording and he just pops on.
Well, we have a jam-packed show today. We have some thoughts. Listen, we're not going to completely spoil all the surprises of Brian Baldinger, who is our guest on the show. I just realizing we are less than 100 days away from the NFL season. And I've always had this idea where I want to break down each individual division, you know, kind of do like a one show preview each of the divisions. So we start off with the AFC East, you know, got to break down. I had to ask him a bunch of questions about Bill Belichick and the coaching styles that are, you know, a lot of people are up in arms about who's calling plays, who's not calling plays. Joe Judge is already making a hissy fit out of you love hearing that, right?
If I never hear that guy's name again, I will be thrilled.
And I have a bunch of feedback that I want to throw to you, especially Steve, talking about Baker Mayfield. We have some new news on Deshaun Watson that we have to get to. Colin Kaepernick. I want to get to some hockey stuff because I just don't want to watch hockey for the rest of the summer right now. I have to get this off my chest. So the Colorado Avalanche are absolutely unstoppable. If they don't sweep the Stanley Cup, we might have like one of the worst Stanley Cups to watch of all time because they are so damn good. Completed the sweep of the Edmonton Oilers last night. They came from behind and they won 6-5. 6-5 in overtime. On Saturday, I decided that I wanted to, you know, lay some money and bet on the Edmonton Oilers and Avs game. And I said, you know what? First instinct, I said, I think the Avalanche might sweep. I really think that they have a really good chance of going up 2-0. The atmosphere up there in Edmonton, poor Edmonton, like those fans, they deserve better.
No, they really do.
They really, really deserve better. Like that game was enthralling to watch, just the passion and you could just hear the fans screaming through the TV, but, decided to bet. I put some money on a couple of, baseball games. The only one that I lost was, the Red Sox. I guess I can't fade the Red Sox anymore. You know,
they're better. They're better of late. You probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Yep. So they slept the Oakland A's. So I decided to take all of that money and put it on a little hockey game. And I said, you know what? I really think that the Avs are going to win. And then I was like, nah, listen, like, let me just go check Action Network and see what some of their experts are saying. And they're like, back Edmonton. So I put $50 on Edmonton and I lost, and I don't want to watch hockey again. Like I still just can't get this image out of my head where they were up 2-1 and then they tied it. And then they were on like a power play. The puck hit the post, dinged off, went the other way. The guy jumps out of the penalty box, beats the defender and scores through this Mike Smith's fucking legs. God, I'm mad. I'm mad.
I would be mad too. I would be mad too. Cause you got to listen to yourself on all this.
You got to listen to yourself. That's the bottom line, people. Don't listen to Action Network. I might delete my allegiance to Action Network.
I'm starting to get these feelings that these like some of these networks or some of these companies are like just trying to get people. They're like in bed. I think they're like in bed with the sports books where they're like trying to get people to bet one side because they put up these posts. And I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. And then like people are jumping on it. Like I know we don't talk NBA, but like at the beginning of the thing, of the finals, someone put up a post that like 86% of the money was on the Celtics. And I was like, that cannot be true. I was like, no. I know the Celtics are good, but like, that just cannot, that can't be true. There's just no way.
Did they mean it in the sense of 86% of the money for the series? Because I mean, Vegas is Vegas is absolutely in love. Well, so first of all, that is wrong because I know that the prices changed drastically after that game. So yeah. I think the price changed. The Warriors, I think, were minus 170, and then the price flipped like minus 180 for Boston, like after game one. Yeah,
it was quick. It was like
which was weird because I follow Mitch Moss, and Follow the Money is also, if you guys want a great betting show, Follow the Money is fantastic. It's on VSiN, and I listen to those clowns in the morning sometimes because they're on live at 7 a.m. So I get my betting fix in the morning. And so I follow Mitch Moss, and that's what Mitch Moss was saying. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but you got to listen to yourself. You got to listen to yourself. Like, you can't – like, I'm mad for another reason about hockey because the Rangers blew a two-goal lead and lost the game in the last 41 seconds. I was very upset about that.
Yeah.
So I understand your feeling there. That series, I didn't even I thought the Rangers were going to get swept in four, and now they're up 2-1, and I have all this hope, and I just can't can't take my eyes off it now. Like,
are they going to get creamed in the Stanley Cup? Is that, I mean, like what's worse? Like if the Heat made the finals and they were limping into the finals, they just ran out of gas. My basketball team here.
They did.
They just totally ran out of gas. Like what would be worse? You know, going to the finals and getting embarrassed by the other team because you just can't compete, or just getting swept and not going at all. So, I mean, like, what would you prefer? Do you think that they have enough to compete with Colorado?
So here's the only thing I will say. I think if their goalie, if Igor Shesterkin plays the way he is playing against Tampa,
yeah,
they have a chance against anybody.
Okay.
Because the Avalanche also are on their backup goalie. So but the thing is, the Rangers, what happened in game three against the Lightning, you can't give up 50 shots on goal every night and expect to win. Like, you can't do it. They have a shot against anyone because they have the guy who is considered a top three goalie in hockey. Mm-hmm. So they have a shot against anyone. But if you look at the Avalanche play and you look at the Rangers play, it looks like they are competing in different leagues.
Yeah.
The Avalanche are just so damn good.
Dude, what did you say? They look like Iceland.
They look like Iceland from the Mighty Ducks, like just demolishing everybody in their path. Like, it's unbelievable.
I think
Wolf, the Dennis Stanton, is going to like come out off the bench and like start body slamming his guys. Like, I don't know. This is like, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Oh, so,
but they have a shot. I think they're going to beat the Lightning. I do think they are better than
Tampa. I think the Lightning are cooked. You know what? And we don't want three-peats anyways in hockey. That shit.
Is that the thing they're doing? They're giving out free pizza if they win the cup?
No, I said a three-peat.
Oh, a three-peat. I thought you said free pizza. What an idiot I am. The stream, it got caught. I'm an idiot. We don't want it. We definitely don't want it. A three-peat.
Pizza, three-peat?
Pizza and three-peat.
Someone's hungry. I don't know. I drank some bourbon last night, and I decided to cook vegetables at 12:30 at night. So my new name for my parlay, Steve, is the "What in the World Are You Doing?" parlay.
That's probably like, what is that, like +15,000?
+15,000. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, what is
the world are you doing? I decided to eat all of my turkey meat that I cooked yesterday. Oh God. So that was when I posted my vegetables last night.
Obviously. At 1 a.m.
I was trying to do an experiment. I was trying to set up my tripod to do like a speed up cooking situation. So, you know, there was some experimental value in it, but I got a message from one of my friends, and he was like, "What in God's name are you doing?"
I think we'll bump that. +17,000.
plus 17,000. What in God's name are you doing?
Are you doing?
That's the new parlay name. It's for anyone that doesn't, you know, you love Steve on Bad Signal. You got to listen to Parlay Friday. It's fantastic. I think the whole shtick of the shtick in stick,
is,
right?
The whole shtick is
the whole shtick is like they have funny names for the parlays.
Yeah, that's like, that's the best cool, part,
but not the best.
That's like, that's the best part is people just come for the names of the parlays. And then I noticed, I like this though. People that have been following, I love it. They actually, they're like, listen, this guy, he like hit me up. He's like, I don't take your whole parlay. He's like, I'll take some of your parlay and then mix it with something else. And he keeps winning. So I'm like, you gotta send me what you're doing, because obviously, you know, we hit like one a month, like each, like between me and Anthony, like we hit one a month each, which is fine. And we're not betting big amounts, but like you want to win more. And like, people are just like, oh yeah, like I take like half your parlay and then I mix it with something else and I win.
I feel like people do that with our picks during football season. I did have, actually, I need to come on here and say this. There was a new producer at 790 The Ticket, where I work for road games for the Heat. And he's like, he said something and he's like, yo, I follow you on Twitter. I listen to your podcast. It's fucking hilarious. You know, and he's like, listen, like I listened to your podcast during football season and I've actually won a lot of money. So people listen, they take the bets, they love the bets. But I mean, every time I drop five or six picks, I'm on a Fade Fallon, pick six?
It's a pick six on Fridays. It's a
pick
them.
Six on Fridays, Saturdays, whenever that is. Damn, I gotta brushing up on my NFL, man.
So do I, actually.
I've been sleeping in a pool of basketballs for a long time. You know, so pick six, I mean, most people will take some of my picks and not there. I mean, and not going to hit. I mean, it's the same thing with me. Like, I think maybe only like one or two of them have hit like all six of them completely.
Yeah. And it's that, remember that, like you had like one of those weekends where you had like, you were like 5-1.
Oh, no. So it was back-to-back weekends. I was 12 of 13 in back-to-back weeks.
It was a dominant performance.
Yeah.
It was like Jimmy Butler game six against the Celtics. Like,
Jimmy Butler!
Nobody talked about that. Like, I feel like he had like a historic performance.
It was only him and Michael Jordan that had better, you know, a 40-point game with four steals and all the numbers. It was him and Michael Jordan. There was someone sent me some stupid ass TikTok and they're like, you know, this is breaking news. I have a conspiracy theory that Jimmy Butler and Michael Jordan are related.
People they, will like, say
anything. But, and I'm just like, yo.
All you need is comments. So like if people start commenting like you're crazy this, it just gets pushed to more people because that's like positive engagement.
Wow. Is this Lark Media NYC that's reporting? This is
Lark Media reporting from Bad Signal on Tuesday.
One of the things that he did say that I really loved, the backside of the conversation, it was like, hey, I want to ask you about Baker Mayfield, but maybe I'll stick away from it. But he basically was agreeing with me that Baker Mayfield will be a starting quarterback in the NFL at some point. And if he had Baker Mayfield has the opportunity that he could, if he wanted to compete for five starting positions in the NFL, that he would win them out. And he said, I said, for what teams? He said, there's a team in your backyard that I think that they could compete. Listen, I don't think Tua Tagovailoa is going to be starting in the NFL for the Dolphins through week four. That's my prediction. And he was saying, listen, Baker Mayfield could win that job easy. He could win the job easy in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
He could win the job easy in Houston. I mean, why doesn't he come back to Texas? He's a Texas boy. He went to Baylor.
Well, he started at Baylor and left and went to
I'm stupid.
Or Texas Tech or something.
Oklahoma. Yeah. No, but he's just I'm thinking, yeah, because he's from Texas.
He's from Texas. But yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like he's better than, I don't even know who the Texans quarterback is, the guy last
Davis
year.
Mills.
Davis Mills. He's better than Davis Mills. He's better than Drew Locke and Geno Smith. Is he better than Tua?
Yep.
He's probably a better fit for that system than oh my God. I shouldn't be talking about this, but like a couple of weeks ago, they showed like Tua throwing a pass to Tyreek and like he underthrew
him by like 5 yards. It got 3 million views because the ball was like, having some gravity issues through the air.
Yeah, like it's like you're fighting the wind like with that. Like, what are we doing? He probably could start for the Giants.
Oh yeah. Right now. I'm not buying into any of the hype that they're saying. Hey, listen, who did I see on NFL Network the other day? They said, listen, Daniel Jones, he's a great quarterback.
They didn't pick up his option. They know they don't want him. They didn't pick up his option. They don't want him. They're doing this the right way. I like what I'm seeing.
Okay. Right? So they're doing nothing. They're tanking, and then they get a good pick.
They got two good picks. They picked two linemen there and Evan Neal. Evan Neal was the guy I wanted the whole time. Great. I don't care about anything else. We stink. We get a high pick and we go get a quarterback. They didn't pick up Jones's option. Let's just be terrible and let's move on. That's
okay.
It.
All right. You had some interesting thoughts you wanted to talk about with Colin Kaepernick as well. I'm kind of anti Colin Kaepernick on my show, but this was a rather interesting proposal that you had here, Steve.
So everybody's talking about like him working out for the Raiders and like
he's not coming back to the NFL. Right. First of I have something to say. Okay, go ahead.
Here's my thing. Yeah, nobody talks about this on any network anywhere. It's like we want to just ignore this fact. He hasn't played in the NFL in 6 years. 6 years. That is a long time for somebody to be out of anything. Like if I was out of podcasting for 6 years and I tried to come back, I mean, I probably could. I'm pretty good. But it's hard to be out that long and come back and play at a high level. Like, yeah, sure. He looks great in shorts and t-shirts. So does the kid that lives down the block from me that goes to the park and throws to like his friends. They all look good in shorts and t-shirts. He hasn't played in 6 years. And before he left the league, he was bouncing 5-yard drag routes to wide receivers. So I'm not like, why is nobody talking about this? Everybody's just like, no. He's better than like half the starters. I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah, where does that come from? Sorry, that's my rant. I'm good.
Listen, like I'm all about racial equality, but at this point, it's over for this guy. He had an opportunity to come back to the NFL. Remember that workout that he had in Atlanta?
Yes.
Where half of the league sent their coaches down there. 30 minutes before the workout, he cancels the workout and moves it an hour and a half away. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
Oh, yeah. He cancels the fucking workout and moves it to another facility that's an hour. Like, are you really trying to be, like, the elusive Mr. Go-Go Gadget here? Like, I don't understand what the concept or anything that was in his mind to do that. Like, you have your opportunities that are presented in front of you. Like, let things come to you. Let things happen. Let God make good things do to you. Right. You had everything set up for you to, you know, to make a comeback, regardless of whether he was banned from the league or not. Okay. I agree with you. And also, you think that Josh McDaniels and the Las Vegas Raiders are just going to, he's going to let Colin Kaepernick walk into his locker room. His first year, his first season, trying to have the redemption story of that shit show that happened with the Indianapolis Colts, where he signed on, agreed to be the head coach, then resigned faster than Bill Belichick wrote his name, and I resigned from the head coach of the New York Jets on a fucking napkin years ago. Okay. All right. He's giving Derek Carr a second chance. He also signed Jarrett Stidham from the New England Patriots. He was supposed to be the heir apparent to Tom Brady, and everyone, Jarrett Stidham. And I mean, like his wife is more famous than he is. Sorry, no room for Colin Kaepernick on that squad. And listen, I don't know. Go play for like the fan controlled football league. Wouldn't that be more exciting to him to play for like one of the fan controlled football leagues?
Or even like go to the USFL.
Or the USFL or something. Like you would get more people watching that and more sponsors than running amok in someone's locker room in the NFL.
The XFL is coming back. So
he should play. Yeah.
What's up? He should play there.
He should play there. What's like something's got to come to rest.
And then guess what? Then if you want to say, okay, this guy's been out of football for a while and he looks good there, then maybe he gets a shot to play in the NFL. But like, you can't be out of something for this long and come back and be productive. You're not going to convince me that that's the case. No. That's it. End of combo.
End of story. A rather interesting scenario is coming up with Deshaun Watson. You know, speaking of Baker Mayfield, he still is a member of the Cleveland Browns. A lot of people are not happy about Deshaun Watson coming in and taking the reins of the starting position as a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, including one Jim Tomey. Jim Tomey, longtime Cleveland Indians slugger. I mean, that dude just used to just slosh baseballs
mashers
out of the park. Canceled his season tickets because he was not happy with the Cleveland Browns. One Jason Jackson is from Cleveland, Ohio. He is not happy about Deshaun Watson being the quarterback. He also hates Baker Mayfield. So, you know, that's on the other side of the coin here. But Deshaun Watson, a new accuser, the 24th accuser. Could this scenario potentially ruin his career? I mean, are we getting to the point that I know, Roger, at 345 Park, you take your sweet ass time, but I just kind of want to get a response and see how long he's going to miss.
Yeah.
How many games is he going to miss?
How many what?
How many games is he going to be suspended?
I think he's going to miss a whole year.
You think so? Really?
I mean, what?
I don't think so.
What do you
think? I think, do you remember when, what was it, Tyreek Hill got in trouble?
He got in trouble, but he didn't get suspended.
He didn't get suspended, and they kind of waited a whole season, and then it just kind of
fell by the wayside. Under the rug. He had audio recordings that were not good, and he didn't get suspended, whatever. I don't know. This is like just a weird situation now.
This is bad. This is not good.
Because also, I don't know if you heard his lawyer last week. Mm-mm. What he said that didn't do anybody any favors. His lawyer, I would have fired this guy immediately.
Why?
If I'm Deshaun Watson. His lawyer comes out and says, just so everybody knows, happy endings aren't harassment.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that.
What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Do you have any feel for the situation? Do you have any awareness of the situation?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Listen, you should just go talk to Robert Kraft about that one.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Robert Kraft. Imagine he was like, my boy Rob knows.
Yeah, my boy Robert up in Jupiter.
But, what are you doing? What is wrong with that? That didn't do any favors. But now, so apparently this, because the woman who the 24th accuser who just came forward wasn't on the original list, they're mentioning possibility of he could get his contract voided.
That's insane. I texted my buddy Ian Rappaport to ask him about, to confirm that he has not gotten back to me. That's why Adam Schefter is my favorite. Thank you, Ian, for not getting back to me. Listen, Adam Schefter, I could text him the same thing. He might immediately respond. I needed something. It's been 30 minutes. I needed something for the podcast to confirm that Deshaun Watson could potentially lose his multi-million dollar contract with the Cleveland Browns. Thanks, Ian. I guess we will find out on the next show.
I guess. It's just like here's how I feel and I've always felt about the situation.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, I've never done anything wrong, this, that, the other thing. Okay, if you had, and I'm not accusing anybody, I'm just saying, if you had one accuser and you were like, oh, I didn't do anything wrong. It's just, she just wants money. You have now 24 accusers. Did they all get in a room together and say, we all want money?
Also, have they sourced this woman out? Is it legit?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know.
Could she just be popping in? If I was Deshaun Watson, I'd be pissed. I would just be like, wait a minute. That didn't happen.
You think the Texans planted her?
Dude, they could. They seriously could. Maybe it's Jim Tomey so he can get all his money back. Jim Tomey placed her so he can retroactively get all the money back that he's had from the stadium of sadness.
Oh, sorry. They're no longer the Indians either.
Oh yeah, the Guardians.
The Guardians. I feel like they like.
Are they a good baseball team? Oh, I mean,
no.
Terry Francona is still.
They're not good though. They're like, they can't hit lefties for shit. They're struggling a little bit, but I think that they tried to save money. I think they chose the name Guardians so they could save money on like half their apparel and half their uniforms because it still ends in like DIANS. So I'm just saying, I don't know. Maybe they cheaped
they're
out.
Just, they're saving. They're just
they're cheaping out on apparel.
Money in Ohio.
They're cheaping out on apparel. Ohio's just trying to save money today. Like this.
Well, you think that they're just gonna unstitch?
They're just gonna unstitch, like for their apparel stuff. They'll just unstitch the Guardians. High-end. Yeah, that's it. That's all you got to do.
It's more letters.
It's more letters, but it's only half.
Half of it. So they just
half
like,
of it's the same.
Just listen. Just send all the 2-for-1.
I'm on to something. Flippers. I'm on to something here. I gotta go investigate and prove it. That's it.
Oh my god.
That's okay. It. I'm on to it.
That's all we got. Let's listen to Brian Baldinger. And well, you know what, Steve? The next guest that we have on for next week's show. To do the NFC East, we're definitely going to have you. We're going to do a three box.
Oh, I'm going to pop in.
Three box situation. And we might get whoever we have to think about our guest list. But we're gonna do NFC East next.
Oh, I need to. I have questions. Got questions.
Oh, you got questions. And then I need to send you this Detective Stevie Content Sleuth.
That's it.
Yo, I expect a TikTok at the end of the day about how Ohio is trying to save money here.
I'll have it tonight. I'll have it tonight. Maybe. Oh my god, that would be great. Because my man on the street stuff did really good in Philly. Like I don't know why. Like
because it's great content. Sheffield Scheffler.
Scheffler, yeah.
Scheffler.
Peter.
Ian Rappaport. He came through. Okay.
Oh wow. You got to take back everything you said.
I got to take back everything that I said. He said, hey, hope you're doing well. Not hurt. I have not heard about that clause. So not true.
Pro Football Talk. They better redact.
Mike Florio is full of shit.
They better redact that tweet.
Another edition of Bad Signal Podcast with my old buddy from NFL Network, Brian Baldinger. Welcome to the show. We are getting and transitioning back to talking about NFL. My favorite topic of the year. Always.
Well. The last time I talked to you, Courtney, we were talking NBA playoffs. So we are doing a real pivot right here to what everybody else is talking about. I mean, there's a couple games left in the finals, but everybody else is talking about, we're 100 days away. You know, in 96 days, the season kicks off. So we're under 100 days away.
Are you a big Hall of Fame? Do you take much stock in like the Hall of Fame game, or do you kind of think it's a waste of time and it's at a disadvantage for those teams that have to play 5 preseason games versus 4? Or I know they changed the rules a little bit.
Yeah, I was just looking. The Raiders are playing the Hall of Fame game this year.
Yeah,
Raiders in Jacksonville, I think. I think that's what it is. But anyways, they got an extra preseason game. Teams, nobody wants to play these games, so you got to get through it. It's a good chance to kind of, look at some of your younger guys that might have a chance to stick it at the bottom of the roster. So you get those guys a chance.
Oh yeah.
It's a good thing about it, Courtney, is it kicks off the season. It's a nice ceremony. It's great to see all the Hall of Famers getting back and getting some attention and the new guys going in this year. I mean, it's great. It's great for the sport.
Do you think Richard Seymour was the greatest first round pick of Bill Belichick's era? I know it's taken him a very long time to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, one of my favorite, the powerhouse. When he was at his prime, he was absolutely unstoppable coming off the line as an edge rusher. I mean, he changed the game and really cemented the legacy of that Patriots front seven. Why did it take him so long to get into the Hall? And do you think he's one of the more underrated draft picks by Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I would say so. He was a first-round pick, and, much are expected from those guys. But, he delivered. He was a foundation piece. Willie McGinnis, a bunch of guys that were up there, at that time. I mean, they had such, depth and flexibility. And Richard could play inside. He could play a 3 technique. He could play outside. He could go up and down the line. And so, and he was very coachable. He was a great guy, you know, and like most Patriots, like they sent him off before they're really done, you know, and that's kind of what they did to Richard. So I don't think he maximized his time in New England because he still had good years left in the NFL, but it's good to see him on. And why he didn't get in, I can't. Those voting and the voting, Courtney, is we know there's always politics and everything. I don't know, like, who was pounding the table for Richard Seymour before somebody else got him at it. Those are some of the things that you have to kind of weigh against, you know, what year you were supposed to go in your first year, who you're up against that year. Tony Boselli took forever to get in. He's getting in. He got passed over a bunch. So the fact he's still young, he can still enjoy this, Courtney. He's not Drew Pearson getting in, you know, 30 years later, the way he got in. He's getting in. He can still enjoy his time, you know, as a relatively young man.
Switching gears to another, I mean, one of the greatest current players in the league, Aaron Donald, after going on a number of different talk shows, podcasts, saying, listen, if I were to leave the NFL right now, I'd be fine. I don't need to play football anymore. It was like, let's need her that. And it was, let's rally you back in, because he just got a 2-year extension, $60 million with a record $40 million of that to be guaranteed. Is he deserving? He is the most, highly paid non-quarterback. That is the most expensive non-quarterback contract. How many years does he have left? Or would it have just been a sad sight to see Aaron Donald walk away from the league? It seems like the Rams really need him in that.
They do. I mean, he's such an important part of the league. You know, he's such a face of the league. And I mean, he's easily the best non-quarterback in the league. And if you want to include the quarterbacks, I don't know, Brady, Rodgers, a couple guys are, you know, you would take Mahomes, Josh Allen, you take a couple guys maybe over him because the quarterback is just that valuable. But he makes everybody else around him better. I talked to him on the field before the game, Super Bowl Sunday. And this was a big moment for him. You know, he knew that there would be a time in the game to take the game over. And he did. The last two plays of the game, he basically choked, you know, Cincinnati out. And so he has that type of ability. He understands when the game is hanging in the balance, not everybody can do it, but he knows when to take the game over. He's done that throughout his career. He's still a young guy, Courtney, but I think what he was saying, he was really honest about it. I think when he said, if it all ends today and I walk away, I'm fine. I believe that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's never been about the attention or the glory or any of that. Like, the season ends, he slips out the back door like Barry Sanders did. He goes straight to Pittsburgh. He's in the gym the next day. Like, he's doing his workout, his routine. Not a lot of people see it. He doesn't want a lot of people to see what he does. He's very private like that, private family guy. And so I do believe that, you know, he doesn't want to leave every body part on the field before he leaves. But at the same time, if there's money to be made, make all the money you can make.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a valid point over there. But Baldy, we got to hear the story about your finger. I need to know, like, just the backstory.
That's, you think
just,
there's a story there, Courtney?
Is there a story? What happened? No. I mean, what happened when
I played in the offensive line, Courtney. You know, it's not pretty or sexy. But, you know, like, fingers get damaged in there, you know? Like, my finger got caught
in Randy White's
jersey. No, in a jersey. Got caught because I held for a living. Got caught in a jersey one day in summer practice. I was with Dallas. I was holding Randy White. And the finger got jerked out of the joint. And, you know, I was kind of like screaming. I never really had that feeling before, that sensation. The defensive line thought I overreacted. They all made fun of me because they all had fingers that looked like this. They were like, join the club. So, you know, it was relatively early in my career, maybe my second year. And so I basically just taped these last two fingers together for the rest of my career. If you ever see any pictures of me, those two fingers are always taped. And little did I know that, you know, when you make a living after football in the media business, that it can come in handy. You know, people want to see it. They want to take a picture of it. There's websites for Baldy's pinky. So I'm a proud owner of that pinky right now.
There's a website. Are people selling T-shirts with you in your hands?
Well, there's website. I mean, if you could go on Baldy's Pinky, there's websites out there. People are obsessed with it. So I'm not Googling it or anything like that, but people tell me it's out there.
Oh God. Brian Baldinger, one of my favorite people. Yeah. We were talking about the NBA finals. He was at Game 7. We caught up on that game, and Pat Riley just had his end of the year press conference. One of my favorite times of the year. And he says, the dragon still has not left the body. I am still grieving.
Yeah.
Can you relate to that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's like what I texted, you know, like sudden death is sudden death, man. And you can play 7 games and you go, okay, like it's coming down to the 7th game, but it just rips your soul out. You know, it just leaves you hollow. There's more basketball to be played and you're not playing. You know, and they were so close. You know, I mean, there was a 3-point shot there in the last minute. Great player took the shot, didn't make it. You know, who knows? But, you know, you credit the player for wanting to take that shot, talking about Jimmy Butler. But, and a chance to win it. And that's all you can ask in that type of situation with the injuries they went through in the long season that it is. And, look, the Celtics are showing pretty well here, you know, so far in the finals. But, you know, for Pat Riley – you know, it's just about rings. It's about championships. Nothing else really, you know, those type of people, they're driven, they're obsessed. I remember being, when I first started kind of retiring and trying to get in the media, I used to get press passes to New York, to the Knicks games. And I would interview Nick players, Patrick Ewing, whoever. And Pat Riley was the coach, you know, of some of those teams. And they were like just the most physical. It was just a different level of basketball back then. Pat Riley took his game up there to New York, and it was great being around him. It was great being in the garden with them, just like it was in L.A., just like it is now in Miami. Like, there's a presence above everybody else inside that building. And when you see his picture and you look at him, you know what that guy is about.
Yeah. Are you a Philadelphia 76ers fan? Like, where do you base your allegiance? I know. I mean, look, I know NFL films, they pull you up there a lot. You reside down here in South Florida, which is good for me. So I can come over and do a little Baldy's breakdown during the season. Since apparently some of the girls at NFL Network don't know much about football, you know, we gotta relearn. We gotta relearn a lot of the.
There'll be some learning going on next week, Courtney.
We'll see. Yeah, that's exactly it. Are you basically your allegiance?
I go back and forth, Courtney. I'm right here in Marlton, New Jersey. I'm literally 10 minutes away from NFL Films. Okay. So I live at NFL Films during the season. I know every custodian that, you know, vacuums at night, that polishes the chrome and all the awards that they've won. I mean, I know everybody by name. I live in that place. It's my, you know, it's my little comfort zone. But I get down to Fort Lauderdale a lot, you know, this time of the year. I'm leaving to go down tomorrow. So, you know, I get back and forth a little bit because that's my lifestyle. But I know what I need to do during the season. It's a 90-hour work week. Yeah. And it's easy to do. I mean, it's just easy.
How often do you go into the NFL Films? I mean, that room, it's remarkable. For anyone that's never taken a tour in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, it is a remarkable facility. Steve Sable's office is left as if he was there yesterday. I mean, that great man passed away many years ago. And the most remarkable thing to me as I was scurrying through his notebook cards, and I know that a lot of people you know, they don't know about this, but Steve Sable would keep boxes of note cards on every single player, and his stack on Bill Belichick was this thick. I mean, inches. And he had great. He wrote these anecdotes. And how often do you get in there to maybe like look at some of the stuff, or you just kind of admire from afar? Can you just speak to the greatness of,
well, I mean, his office on the 2nd floor and that tucked away in the corner. And, I just briefly, Courtney, I'll just go back. Like when I retired, I knew what I wanted to do. Wasn't exactly sure how to get there, but I knew what I wanted to do. And I knew in order to be an analyst, I knew I had to study the game tape. And so I saw Steve Sable in a gym one Sunday morning before an Eagle game. And I was doing the pregame show. And he was working out in there, and I went up to him, and I just said what I wanted to do. And he said, yeah, just my secretary's Kathy Davis. Come on over, Baldy. Like, we'll get tapes made. We'll set you up. Help yourself. So Steve Sable has this – he had a presence. It's still there. But when he would walk into a room, the room was his. Because you never really knew what he was thinking about, but it was something to do with football or making movies or art or something. Like there was something driving him that day. And so, and that's everywhere, you know, it's a museum in that place, but that index card file that you're talking about, I taped a bunch of these shows that I started called Film Sessions. I remember I did one with Carson Wentz and Joe Thomas in there. And I told Joe Thomas about the index card thing. And he was really curious. You know, he was kind of just pulling cards out like people do. And just, what did he write about Brett Favre in, you know, 1992, you know, first year in Green Bay or whatever. Like you just read that or something. But yeah, that was Steve. He collected things, you know, and it could be magazine covers or football games or, you know, music or artwork from movies. I mean, it was just, and it's all on display.
He was a fascinating man. Well, aren't you lucky that you get to walk through those halls?
Every day, Cody. I do. Yeah. I feel that way every day I walk through those halls.
Yeah. Oh, that's what having a great job is about. It's about a sense of pride that you walk in the building. You say, first of all, I belong here. And second of all, I am in awe every single day. I step back and I look at my surroundings and I say, I am so lucky to be here. And I earn and I approach every day, you know, to get better. Even if, you know, you're the stature that you're at right now, as a player, how do you continue to learn? And I love asking people this, was asking Stephen A, how do you continue to learn and get better in terms of, like, you know, film studies and art? It's just a matter of hours, putting hours on, laying bricks on top of hours and studying.
You know, I'll give you an example. I was at this, a buddy of mine's a special teams coach for the Baltimore Ravens, Randy Brown. He's also the mayor of my town here in Marlton, New Jersey. And his son is the assistant special teams coach for the Philadelphia Eagles, Tyler Brown. So their daughter is singing at this function the other night. Randy asked me if I'd come and support her, so I did. So anyways, I'm talking to Tyler Brown. He's the assistant special teams coach for the Eagles. Mm-hmm. And they have a great kicker, great young kicker. So he missed one extra point last year, 44 for 44. And he missed a total of three field goals the whole season, 30 for 33. So I was asking him about the operation, you know, snapper to hold to kick. And he was telling me about what they do and one thing that's different about their holder in Philadelphia. So I couldn't wait till Saturday morning to go over there and watch the operation just to see what he was talking about. And he called it a ghost hand, you know, like the holder puts the ball down and the kicker kicks it, but the hand doesn't move and they don't foul the ball for two counts so that the hand never is guilty of moving the ball. So it's always laces pointing right to the goalpost. Okay. So it's just a detail.
Yeah.
But to your point, like that's the level of detail. You say, how do you learn? Well, I just learned something about holding a football on an extra point that they do. And one of the reasons why their operation is so flawless. And so those kind of things, like I remember one day I made a mistake. I didn't think it was a mistake. I asked Bill Belichick in the first press conference of the season about the evolution of the flex tight end. There wasn't one other question asked in that press conference.
Oh, I know. Because all about that.
40 yeah. minutes, 40 minutes going back to all the great, you know, from John Mackey on. So then I started thinking about some of the things that he said. So I went back and I started watching some of these players and some of the things he was talking about. And so you never know when you're going to learn something new. You just have, you know, you got to be open. And the great thing about walking into the hallways of NFL films is I feel like every time I teach something or I learn something, like it's my way of giving back and respecting the game. Like there always has to be, the game has to be bigger than anything. You can have all the things that happen around the game, some good, some bad, whatever. But like the game is still bigger than everything else. It's still going to be here long after all of us are gone in some form or another. So you have to me, teaching the game, learning more about the game is my way of respecting the game.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Belichick is such a fascinating individual. You could sit back. I think he won an Emmy for all of his work on the NFL 100 seasons and sitting there and, I mean, the interviews and – you say that he went on for 45 minutes. So that's his way of just wasting the media's time because he just doesn't want to answer any other questions. You did him a favor. He must have loved you. He should have written you a thank you note, send you an edible arrangement.
I knew about Bill Belichick from my mom, Courtney, because my dad played at the Naval Academy. Awesome. And when he got done playing, he coached at the Naval Academy. He coached the plebe team. And his assistant coach with him was Bill Belichick, Steve Belichick, mm-hmm. his dad. So my mom remembers little Billy running around the field with his dad at practice when he was 4 or 5 years old.
That's really cute.
And my dad's weakness was he could not sit there and watch film. He just couldn't. He'd fall asleep. He could do a lot of other things, my dad, but he couldn't do what Steve Belichick did and what Bill would do. Like, Bill was in that film room when he was 4 years old. And so, like, when you think about, like, what he has become, you just have to go back to his roots of Annapolis, Maryland. You know, and why he's always had players from the academies on his team. His long snapper now is from the United States.
Yeah.
He's always respected the academies and the players and what they do and the responsibilities and the commitments and all that. And he's always, you know, tried to employ some of his players there from there.
Bill, this year is approaching a rather difficult challenge, or, I mean, as everyone in New England says, oh, he's in the hot seat, and, you know, if he's got to improve, and Mac Jones is coming in. Great kid, by the way. I'm a big fan of Mac, and I think it's less on Mac's progression as a quarterback and his ability to improve and decision-making and all of that stuff that comes with the intellectual aspect of the football player and learning. But more so the people are concerned about losing Josh McDaniels, losing your primary play caller, and how he has evolved Mac Jones just in his rookie year. But it's also this concern about bringing in Joe Judge and having Joe Judge call some of the offensive plays. They don't want Matt Patricia to come and call the defensive plays. How do you see some of that directional coaching going down, I guess, you know, in terms of, you know, who's you kind of get the sense of what I'm saying. Like, how can you speak to that? Because a lot of people are, including myself, are rather a little bit concerned.
Well, they've always taken the opposite approach of almost every team in the league, Courtney. I mean, if you looked at the Miami Dolphins coaching staff right now, I think it's like 26 guys, you know, in some capacity or another. I mean, Bill still probably between 8 and 10 coaches. Like, they've got the smallest staff in the league. So, you know, none of these coaches really have gone on and had great success. I mean, go through the list of all of them, you know, Charlie, I mean, you go through all of them. We'll see what
Josh. Romeo Crennel, who just retired.
Just go through the list of them. So there was something about maybe what Bill does and how he does it, you know, and how his input to what they're going to do. Like, I was on the Raider podcast today. And they're saying, well, what should we expect from Josh, you know, Josh McDaniels this year? I said, well, you know, one thing about Bill Belichick, I don't care what year it was, Courtney, if they lost a bad game or went through a bad stretch, I guarantee you they would line up in I formation the next week, the first play, and run the ball right down your throat. Mm-hmm. Like, it was always their reset button. And so, like, there's just certain things that they have done. Now, the mistake that a lot of these coaches have made, Josh McDaniels did it his first time in Denver, is they try to take Tom Brady's playbook and give it to somebody. Like, nobody can do that.
Yeah.
And so even Bill right now, you can't give Josh McDaniels offense, you know, I think Mac is really bright and he can digest a lot, but even he was telling me, like, I saw him at the Super Bowl and we did something together and he was telling me that they could have as many as 30 different protections, which is way too many. Now, you have a protection for every single scenario, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's too many protections. It's too much. And I, you know, so at some point you have to trim it down to make it more workable. And you can't have a play or an offense or a protection for every single situation the way they did with Brady. Because not only could Brady handle it, but he could disseminate everything to make sure everybody knew what they were doing. So I mean that's 20 years. So I don't know what the offense is going to look like. Cole Strange is probably going to be starting at guard. A lot of people didn't like the draft pick from UT Chattanooga, but they have done this before, and it has worked. And so if he comes in, and I don't think he's Quentin Nelson, but you know, but if he comes in and he starts and he plays at a high level, who cares where they draft him? Yeah. So I think everybody has to like step back and just watch this thing. You know, I don't know. I don't think they're better than Buffalo. You know, I don't think they're close to Buffalo, but we have to wait and see. And they've always trained their players. Malcolm Butler is back. He was a free agent from West Texas A&M, became a Pro Bowl player, big free agent guy. Now he's back. They know how to train these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of Buffalo, I was scrolling through my Instagram and the most bets on the futures for Super Bowl are the Buffalo Bills. And it's this guy's like, Buffalo, we're going to win. And I said, it's perfect timing to have Baldy on the show as well. Will Ken Dorsey pull some of that Brian Daboll magic from his time in Buffalo and really be the support system that Josh Allen really needs? Or is Josh just kind of stepping into his own stratosphere of his own greatness?
I remember being at NFL Network, Josh Allen's like second preseason game his rookie year. I never forget, he was playing Cincinnati. An international TV game. We're all sitting in the theater room in Culver City there, and we're all watching the game, and we're going to talk about it after, you know, some Total Access show, whatever. So he's just getting destroyed. The offensive line stinks, you know, and he's throwing the ball, like literally throwing it up for grabs, you know, just trying to extend a play. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, this guy, you know, they were trying to make this judgment on him, you know, on day one. And, you know, what you have to factor in with Brian Daboll is he was there from day one. And so we saw him make plays or try to make plays that just you can't do at the NFL level. They're just going to make you look bad. And he did that for a year, year and a half. And now he doesn't do that anymore. And to your point, I think Josh is just – like he's in his own stratosphere right now. Last time we saw him play, you know, he threw 6 touchdown passes. They never punted against Kansas City. Like they had there was nothing Kansas City could do to stop him. If they got the ball back, you know, in the overtime, they would have scored again. I mean, they were an unstoppable force. And that's kind of where they're at right now. And I think all they have to do is kind of guide him right now. I don't think he needs a lot. I think Mahomes is like that. I think these guys understand the game. They know what their limitations are. They want the ball in crunch time. 4th downs, give it to me. I'm going to just go truck somebody. Like they just have, that's where they're at. They did it right. They never stopped building around him. You know, they drafted him and they never stopped surrounding him, you know, with Stephon Diggs, whoever it was. Yeah. They just kept building. And now they are a complete team.
It's crazy because one of my friends who was a Patriots scout, now he's with the Tennessee Titans organization. He had told me, texted me, he's like, hey, I'm up in Wyoming right now. Right. That's where he went. Wyoming. He's like, I'm scouting the future number one overall pick. And this was 2 years before he went into the draft and he's talking about Josh Allen. So I have Josh Allen in my top 3 of MVP. I think that's actually going to happen. I always say it, but it hasn't really happened necessarily with the numbers to put up behind it. But I really truly think that they could steamroll. How disheartening is it, speaking of Josh Allen and that game that you talked about with the Kansas City Chiefs? One coin flip, one 50-50 opportunity away from going to the Super Bowl or, you know, I mean, going on to the next level. Obviously there were a couple more steps with that. How disheartening is it as a football player to be kind of the case study in the offseason where the NFL changes the rules about playoff overtime rules? Like that's gotta sting harder than anything. You want to talk about the dragon not leaving the body? I think the dragon will stay in the body for Josh Allen and that Buffalo Bills team because they were absolutely robbed.
There's a lot of sting there. And it didn't surprise me that they, you know, reversed the rule. That's what the NFL has always done. You know, you get a controversial call in a big moment with everybody watching, they're not going to let it happen again. But that being said, you know, they had to stop Kansas City. They had 13 seconds to stop Kansas City from tying the game.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do it. So there is something about that in that moment that Mahomes ripped their heart right out of their throat.
Yeah.
You know, with 13 seconds to go to get it to overtime. and to win the coin toss and then to do what they did. So there is some responsibility as a defense that you can't let a team go 45 yards in 13 seconds to kick a game-winning, you know, tying field goal. Like, you just can't let that happen. So there was some of that. But, you know, to see Josh Allen just sitting there on the bench, twiddling his thumbs, like, that's hard to – that was hard to watch.
Yeah.
And there wasn't one person in America around the world that didn't want to see him take the field and go tie it up. I mean, I thought it was dumb. The whole thing was dumb because I thought, like, the rules weren't equitable with the regular season to begin with. It was always sudden death. It was never the same as the regular season. Regular season game can end in a tie. You can't have a playoff game end in a tie. So yeah. The whole thing seems stupid to me. Like, okay, well, if you go down and score a touchdown, you win the game. But if you go down and kick a field goal, the team gets – like, the whole thing didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Switching to the other – well, the other two teams. I guess now that we're on the subject of the AFC East, the most highly bet ticket in the offseason is that the Jets will win over 5.5 games. Are you buying into the hype?
Oh, yeah. That
all the – I think they're going to be good this year. I really do. Like, there's something inside of me. It's like Zach Wilson's going to turn the corner. Robert Saleh and everything that he has done to that defense, and Sauce Gardner wearing that number one jersey with that big sauce pendant. I think that, listen, you got to think about this, Baldy. When were the Jets at their prime? When Revis Island was an island of its own. It was run, and it started with that defense and that secondary. And I think they made the right decision by drafting Gardner. And I just think there's going to be something – you're going to see a little bit more from the New York Jets.
Well, they had a great draft. I mean, they got three of their top eight players in the whole draft. You know, when you look at Garrett Wilson and, you know, Jermaine Johnson, I mean, they got three of the top eight players. But Sauce, I was actually was in the building in the offseason doing some pre-draft stuff for him when Sauce was visiting.
Yeah.
I just got to tell you, Courtney, like, I know these players visit and they get in this car washes and they go team to team to team. The Jets have been largely dysfunctional for a decade. And that's not even a strong enough word to describe just how dysfunctional they were. But that whole building was juiced, you know, when he was there. And I there wasn't anything in my mind that said Joe Douglas wasn't drafting him if he was there at number four. And it helped that Stingley went number three. So that he was still available. So that kind of helped them a little bit. But I believe I've known Joe Douglas a long time. He's been in my backyard here a bunch when he was in Philly and Baltimore. And I believe in Joe. And for the first time, the head coach and the general manager since Tannenbaum and Rex are on the same page. Yeah. They're joined at the hip. And so, you know, I believe that Robert Saleh right now has a pack of wild wolves rushing a quarterback right now. Like, I think they've got eight, maybe nine, that can get after a quarterback, legit. Okay. And they've got an improved secondary behind them. If Mekhi Becton, I'll see him in July at this function in Dallas. If Mekhi's in shape, this offense is going to roll.
Yeah.
Because Lake Tomlinson and Oliveira Tucker, like, they're going to run the ball with young legs. They're going to have a lot of targets. They got their tight ends. Like, they just got to put it together. You know, it might take a couple weeks, but 5.5. If I was a betting man in this sport, if Roger would let me bet,
yeah,
I'd take a big chunk and put it on the deck.
I might have to do it for you. Weren't there rumors that they were looking to trade Mekhi Becton in the offseason, or was that pending on whether or not the kid was in shape? Because I mean, he's a mauler. He's
unbelievable.
He's unbelievable.
You know, there's Trent Williams. There's Jordan Mulata. There's a few guys that can move men the way Mekhi did his rookie year. Now he's got to stay on the field. He's got to take care of
himself. He's just injuries, right? It's
a,
you know,
he's got a ton of little things that have taken him off the field. Knee last year, but he looked like 10 pounds of, you know what, in a 5-pound bag when I saw him in preseason up in Green Bay last year. He didn't look like he was in shape.
Yeah.
He's been very immature, and that's on him. But that's might be who he is, but we got to find out. But his talent is it's off the chart good. Like if he is 345, 350, and he comes and he plays, the offensive line is going to be good to great. And the Bruce brothers with Oliveira Tucker and Mekhi Becton on the left side is going to get a lot of Baldy breakdown mention.
Okay. I'm excited for that. Well, the last one in the AFC, of course, is the Miami Dolphins. You checked them out in their quick OTAs a couple of weeks ago. I know that you were messaging me. You're like, hey, how come you're not up in here in Davie? I'm like, I don't want to waste 45 minutes on the interstate to go up there. It's a schlep for me down here in downtown Miami. All of that being said, Mike McDaniel, a lot of promise from him coming in as the offensive coordinator in San Francisco. He did bring a lot of his coaching staff down there, maybe a lot more than is needed. You said there's about 26 coaches that they have there. The big question here, obviously, is Tua Tagovailoa. Will he be able to stay on the field? Will he get too much criticism? I'm sure that, you know, it's almost like he's like the new age, like NFL LeBron. It's like, hey, let's talk about Tua and his arm strength and control of the ball and the spin. And, you know, I mean, you could just do a whole breakdown on whether or not he's going to be a viable quarterback for them. But I mean, I don't know. Is the promise there? Is it? Are we overanalyzing Tua's ability in the pocket? Will the Dolphins be fine with him there? Or I can say that maybe Teddy Bridgewater will get a chance. Maybe week 3-4 of the season.
Well, sometimes Courtney, you just have to believe in the player. Like I believe in the person of Tua Tagovailoa. Like what type of person he is. Like I believe in his commitment. I believe in his work habits. I believe in his fundamentals. I believe that they have really, really built the team up around him. I mean, they've got a legit receiving core right now. The ball's going to go down the field to Tyreek. It doesn't even have to go 40 yards down the field. I mean, you can run crossing routes and let him go 60 yards. They got Gesicki back. They've got running backs and Raheem Mostert and group, you know. So they've got everything. They've got a left tackle for the first time since Laremy Tunsil left. I mean, they've got and you know, and when you look at Terron Armstead, like he's a man. Like he's a real man. Like he knows how, like I've known Terron a long time. He's a natural leader. Like you need certain people in positions to lead. They haven't had that guy in Miami forever. They have a guy like that will take the young guys, work with them after practice, film study. Like they've got, and Mike McDaniels is a bright guy. He's a nerdy bright guy, but he's a bright guy. Like you might see a dip in San Francisco without him there. Like he has, I don't know if it's going to translate to coaching a whole team, Courtney, but his ability to just dissect defenses and know how they're going to respond to motions, movement, formations is uncanny. Like it probably is like this big Ivy League brain, you know, that's just, it's all football. And he is that guy. Now there's a lot more than that to coaching any team. So we got to see if he can handle that part, the adversity, you know, a bad start, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Injuries, like whatever, we got to see how he handles it. But I like a lot of the things about that team. I'm a huge fan of Javon Holland, and I got a chance to meet him a couple weeks ago down there at practice. And that guy, I mean, you know, there's a couple guys that could play free safety maybe better than him, but he's got a bright future.
Did you get a chance to touch base with Joe Rose? What are your thoughts on him? He was like my former anchor. I was down here, you know, 25 years old, 10 years ago, it was me and Joe Rose who ran the anchor desk at NBC6 South Florida. And I mean, man, he is quite the personality.
No, Joe is just like,
Joe is just,
but there's a reason why Joe is still working.
Yeah. You know,
he still shows up. He still works his ass off. He knows what he's talking about. Joe's great. I mean, there's not, if they call me at his station to come on and talk football with Joe, like I'll do everything I can to make that possible. But yeah. Joe's been an ally. He's been a good friend. You know, I think we're like 10 fishing trips behind of going fishing with them right now. So we got to get out of the boat one day.
All right, you got to get your ass down here to go on a fishing trip with Joe before he makes his trips. I mean, man, I it was so unbelievable because he would be traveling obviously with the team on the road, and then he would do Sports Final with us, and it would be you know, and then he'd get on the team plane and he would arrive at South Florida at 3:30 in the morning, and then he would go straight to his job at the radio station, 6 a.m. to 10. He didn't sleep. It was, I mean, yeah.
And got to say, look, he's got a 30-year career in South Florida. Nobody else has that.
No, you know, no.
Like, he's unique. Yeah.
Definitely not. Well, my last question, I mean, it was kind of, you touched on that, was San Francisco's potential possible decline of leaving, of having Mike McDaniel leave that organization. I took a lot of also pieces with him. But just in terms of Trey Lance and Trey Lance's progression, are we kind of overhyping Trey Lance slightly? I know that Jimmy Garoppolo, although he did have shoulder surgery on that, still sort of has a handle hold. I mean, I've always learned from the school of Bill Belichick that you go into the season and you earn that starting role. There's nothing that is given to you. It's nothing. You have to prove it. You have to keep it as a mainstay. But your thoughts on the future of the 49ers franchise and what that quarterback situation is going to look like maybe in mid-August or early September.
Well, I've always said that it's a lot harder to replace great coaches than it is great players. And they have, you know, they have been plucking coaches from Kyle Shanahan's staff now for the last 3 years, Robert Saleh, Musico, Mike McDaniel. I mean, all these guys are coming off his tree. You know, I think they're in good shape, you know, from a coaching standpoint. But I think the loss of Mike McDaniel is going to – I think that's going to be felt. But, you know, I think defensively they're going to be really good. And they're – but, you know, the quarterback situation is a little tricky. For some reason, and I don't really understand why they did this, but they really – They played Trey Lance early in the year last year. He started a game, and then they didn't play him at all. Not once. Not one play.
Yeah.
For like straight weeks. And then Garoppolo got hurt, and he started. He did a couple of good things. No, he's basically played 3 games in 2 years. And so, you know, he just hasn't played a lot of football. And so you can sit in the sidelines. Like, he's got a – like, I don't know if you just say, okay, here you go, Trey. Preseason, OTAs, whatever. Like, let's go. Like, part of me says you got to do it. You got to play him, regardless of the leadership, what they feel about Jimmy, which is considerable, because the clock is ticking on his 5-year window, and you got to win these Super Bowls. You got to try to win these Super Bowls.
You got to win in crunch time. I mean, like, you got to. It's almost like it's inevitable that he's going to have a brain fart in the last like 30 seconds of a game. That he makes that one crucial mistake within 2 minutes, the last seconds of the game. That's going to undo him. I mean,
you even like Trey, you got 5 years to try to win a Super Bowl with, you know, on a rookie contract. When you start getting the second contract or the third contract with Russell Wilson and all these guys, like, it becomes a lot more difficult to build a team. And so they, you know, they can afford Nick Bosa and Trent Williams and some great players right now because Trent's on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
So, but I do believe if Jimmy didn't have shoulder surgery in the offseason, they would have traded him. You know, he might be in Carolina right now. He might be, you know, who knows. But, you know, I think he would be gone. So if that was the thinking, then get Trey Lance ready to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I won't go any further with that because, I mean, then I'm going to start thinking about all the other teams. And this is the perfect primer for the offseason. Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, good buddy of mine. Now that we've like officially met, the NFL Network was weird. We would always be remote. We would always, you know, not see each other in person. This was well before COVID and all of those contingencies of logistics and all of that stuff. But this is the perfect little pre-taste of the NFL and some AFC East talk.
Yeah.
I think you've just started a good trend, Baldy, and I can't wait to get up to one of your film sets.
Well, we got 7 other divisions to do, Courtney, so let me know when you're ready for the other 7, okay?
Okay, I'm ready. I mean, I was going to ask you, I was going to dive into like a Baker Mayfield. I have this Baker Mayfield rant. Maybe I'll just – we'll send it to you first, and then we can start off of that because I said that he's going to have to he's really just going to have to – realize that, you know, he's got to be a backup quarterback in the NFL. And I don't think he could swallow that if he wants to get back on the field, but we won't get into that unless you have a thought on Baker.
Well, I just happen to be a Baker Mayfield fan.
I'm a Baker supporter as well. Listen, I love his moxie. I love his attitude. I think that he has this, like, you know, no lose mentality that, you know, drives him to be better, but, it's an unfortunate situation for up there. And I know a couple of people, much like, you know, Udonis Haslam after they fired Brian Flores down here. He was like, I'm not a Dolphins fan anymore. A lot of people are like, I'm not a Browns fan anymore because of the way that they pulled in Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to see how that plays out. But, you know, I would tell you right now that I could give you five teams off the top of my head where if Baker was allowed to compete, he probably wins the job. Okay. You know, so
who are the five teams?
Well, you know, one of them might be pretty close to where you're at right now. You know, I think he would win the job in Seattle.
I agree.
I think he'd win the job in Seattle. I think he'd win the job in Carolina. I mean, you could go through some teams right now. And if Baker was allowed to compete.
Houston?
You know, I think Baker would win the job.
Okay.
If he's healthy. I mean, I don't know what his status is right now with the shoulders. I mean, the shoulders, I don't know how he played last year. Oh, God. How he played. I don't know how he did it. The thing was dangling. I don't know how anybody can be expected to be performing. Now, he's been relatively healthy at Texas Tech and Oklahoma in his first years in Cleveland. He'd been healthy. As much as he'd gotten hit or chased around the pocket, like, you know, I don't know. Like, that guy, he can throw a deep ball. Like, I think he has a lot going for him. And so he just has to, you know, he might be a Ryan Tannehill, Courtney, where he's got to go someplace and wait for his opportunity, win a job. But, you know, that guy is a football fanatic. Like, he'll go compete.
Okay. All right. Awesome. So what are you going to go back to your yard work? I see that you have, like, you know, the, you got the full bandana situation going on here. You got the Polynesian football. It almost looked like a crab. I thought it was going to be like one of those, like, Annapolis, Maryland, crab bowl.
Yeah.
Sure. That's what it looks like in this camera.
Well, the Polynesian bowl is going to be on the NFL Network this year. So we're all excited about that.
Oh, like, exciting.
We got a landing place. Okay. All these, like, I'm very close to the Polynesian culture. So like, I'm pulling for these players who are just so unique.
Can you do the haka?
No, I my mother did not give me a dancing gene. So it's not my fault. It's my mother's fault. So, no, I'm not doing any fire dances. I'm not playing with fire, Courtney. No, I'd let somebody else do that.
It's one of my favorite things. I think there's a couple players that maybe a couple years ago, there was a player at LSU and they were playing in the national championship.
Oh, yeah,
his dad his brother's playing in the park. Who was it?
Braden Fajoco.
Yeah. And they met him in the parking lot and did the haka. And it's just like, you know, oh my God. It was just like, wow, I was getting chills.
Well, his father, it was the warrior for the Hawaiian Warriors. And he was the mascot for the University of Hawaii. So, like, they did a haka for every game out there.
That's so
Aloha great. Stadium.
Yeah. Oh, if you're listening to this, go Google that. Go Google that right now because it was such an awesome video. Oh man.
It'll get you going.
It'll get you going. Yep. Gonna run through a wall with this one. All right, Baldy, thank you so much for your time. This is fantastic.
Love it, Courtney. Thank you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.